it wasn't the airplanes. It was beauty killed the beast.
You are listening to the Night and Day podcast, featuring the interview archives of Western New York music writer Tom Jennings. Tom has interviewed some of the biggest names in music and entertainment, and now you can enjoy these never-before-heard interviews. Here is your host, Tom Jennings.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Night and Day. This time we've got a couple of interviews for you, a double dose of King Crimson, the legendary progressive rockers. We'll be listening to an interview with Adrian Belew, guitarist extraordinaire, and that's an expression that I don't use lightly, and current and longtime drummer of King Crimson, a group that now boasts three drummers, Pat Mastalotto. Pat also did work with Mr. Mister, and I'll talk with him a little bit about his work with one of my favorite Canadian musicians, Kim Mitchell, who I have an interview with that I'll probably post at some point down the road. Anyhow, we'll get started with Adrian Belew. Adrian was a great interview, spent some time talking about his app Flux. It was just about at the launching phase when we were talking about this. He was about to start a North American tour with a date that was coming through Buffalo. That was the impetus of our interview. This is an interview that was set up by Billy James. Billy is a publicist like no other publicist, probably one of my favorite. I've got about four or five that I work with on a semi-regular basis that I absolutely love. And Billy just has a very cool group of artists. And Adrian Belew is definitely fits into that category. And he also wrote a book about, two books about Todd Rundgren. And the Todd Rundgren connection is never very far away from me. So let's get started. Adrian Belew, talking King Crimson, talking Flux, and talking a little bit about David Bowie.
Hello?
Hi, Adrian. This is Tom Jennings with the Niagara Gazette.
Hi, how are you, Tom?
I'm fantastic. How about yourself?
Great. Really excited about all the cool stuff that's happening here. This is our last day of rehearsal and pulling all the pieces together, and then we head out tomorrow morning, and so, you know, I'm getting very excited.
Okay, well, excellent. Well, who's in your band on this tour, just out of curiosity?
This is the power trio that I've had now for the last 4 years. Julie Slick is the bass player. She's been with me actually for 8 years. And Tobias Ralph is the drummer. He's been with us for 4 years. This band is, you know, we've traveled around the world a lot in the last 5 years. And this is kind of our return to playing just as a power trio here in the U.S. We haven't done that for 3 years.
Oh, wow. Well, that's very cool. I mean, your fans must be looking forward to that. I mean, I imagine you'll be showcasing stuff from your incredible career. I mean, is there any era that's really left out of the Power Trio set or no?
Not really. I think this particular set that we've put together this time touches on more material than ever before. We actually play something from 30 different songs.
Wow.
That's a lot of material, but the way we're doing it is we don't play every piece all the way through. They're connected in some, not like a medley, but in other ways. We use some things that kind of interrupt the music. We call them snippets. It's all part of this new concept that I have called Flux, music that's never the same twice. That's my new app that comes out in November. And it's all new music, so I don't want to confuse issues, but we're trying to do something more like that with our live show this time. So sometimes, you know, we'll play a whole piece or a whole song all the way through, depends. Other times, they'll kind of, you know, you'll get it going to a certain point, and then something will interrupt it, and it will change to the next song. So it's really exciting.
So you've got a little bit of structure to the set, but for all intents and purposes, every night's going to be a different night. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. There is a little bit of improvisation thrown in and for good measure here and there as well. The band is you know, very used to playing together now, and so we can kind of stop on a dime and do something completely different, and that's what this show will be about. So it allows us to touch on, like I said, a whole bunch of my material, more than you would normally get in one show.
And you, I mean, you've played with some bigger configurations of bands. I mean, sitting back, I believe you were with the Talking Heads touring group at one point, and with David Bowie, people like that. So in this power trio setting, is it more difficult or easier to kind of maneuver through these changes?
Well, a power trio is one in which everyone really has a lot more responsibility and has to cover a lot more of the music. That's what I like about it. It actually is more challenging. If you have a 10-piece band, or a 7-piece band, as those two bands you just mentioned, you can divide the parts up easily, and people don't have nearly as much to do. In a power trio, you've got to be covering everything all the time. So I like it that way. As a guitarist, it allows me a lot more freedom because, you know, I'm the guitar player. I can sort of guide the band and take it wherever I want, especially in the improv areas. As a band doing set material, it's a challenge because you're really trying to take something that was not even played by a trio and convert it to being that. So it automatically gives a freshness to the material. When we play something from King Crimson, for example, King Crimson was never a trio, you know, it automatically means that we have to come up with our own way of doing it. And I think that's what makes it unique. But it's a very powerful sounding band, very exciting, high level energy. And we can do just about anything we want. But this particular show, I think, is going to cover so much in one 2-hour period.
A nice segue into kind of the King Crimson thing. I mean, you know, Crimson's out on the road right now. You've probably been asked about 1,000 times. But, I mean, were you surprised that they went out without you? Because other than, I mean, in the modern era, certainly your name is synonymous with King Crimson, at least as much as Robert Fripp's.
Well, you know, when I heard from Robert what his idea was, which was that they were going to play material from before I was in the band, the earliest version of King Crimson. And when he told me that, and he said, I don't know if you're right for this, I agreed. Yeah, I'm not right for that. I'm right for what we started in 1981 till now. And since he was intent on playing all the things that happened before that, it came as a surprise to me that he would want to do that. But once I understood what it was going to be, I realized immediately, yeah, this is not something I should even be a part of. So I'm happy about it. It just so happened to coincide with a time where in my life I've got so much going on. I'm so busy, happily busy, creating this new type of music, Flux music, and traveling around the world. I have been playing a lot of Crimson material with our band called Crimson Project, which is a 6-piece band that has Tony Levin and Pat Mastellotto, who are also in the new King Crimson lineup. So we've kind of, you know, I've had my fill of playing King Crimson music recently, so unless it was something new, I wouldn't have been that interested anyway.
So, and that brings up, and this will be my last King Crimson question, but, you know, it's funny, when I was prepping for this interview, and I'm 48 years old, so when Crimson came out with the lineup that featured you, obviously incredibly different from what it was beforehand, I'm wondering if there was any point where you kind of regretted having that King Crimson label, because to me, the John Wetner, the Greg Lake King Crimson, and the Adrian Belew, Robert Fripp King Crimson are just, I mean, I almost have a hard time finding a common thread between the two of them.
Yeah, it's not the same music style at all. It's not the same band, and it wasn't meant to be. From the very get-go, Robert and I said, well, we want to do something that has the level of musicianship to it that King Crimson always has had. But we want to modernize it. We want to reinvent the wheel here. I agree with you totally, although I love the early bands. Our bands, since then, since the 80s through to now, have always prided ourselves on kind of pushing the boundaries with what you can do now, modern music. So To answer your question, it was a double-edged sword for me. I always really liked the fact that we were called King Crimson because it came with such a respect to it, that name. For me personally, it was a band that I always loved, and I felt like, yeah, that's great to be in a band that, you know, you've always really admired. On the other hand, I think for the first few years, there was some backfiring in the sense that the older fans of the older music, you know, kind of rejected us at first, at least. Maybe some of them forever, because they wanted to hear the old music, understandably. So there was a period when we first started where I was a bit uncomfortable because everybody was always screaming for music from the previous King Crimson incarnations. Yeah, everywhere we'd go, we'd hear 21st Century Schizoid Man. I got pretty tired of it. But, you know, when I look back on it now, we were able to overcome that and reposition ourselves as a new version of King Crimson pretty quickly, and I think it's been great ever since.
Yeah, well, I mean, just even having Tony Levin there for a period of time, or Bill Bruford, and I mean, I know the lineup's changed and everything like that, but man, wow! I mean, Levin actually has some roots here, and I'm near Rochester, so he was a Eastman School of Music grad, so he's pretty much a god around these parts, as I'm sure you know, and he's actually playing the same venue you're playing at in Buffalo, I think, either a couple days before or a couple days after with the Stickmen group.
Yeah, well, Stickmen is the other half of the Crimson Project. One half is the Adrian Blue Power Trio, the other half is Stickmen. So, yeah, we love each other. We're playing together, doing lots of things over time, and now we're kind of going separate. They're doing their thing, we're doing our thing for a while. Because we, as I said, we played Crimson Project all over the world. I mean, people here in the States probably didn't understand how much we did, but we did 100 shows around the world, I mean, everywhere, with Crimson Project, and it was mostly King Crimson music. That was the idea behind it, a celebration of Crimson music. So I think now it's a good time that all of us can say, okay, let's go back to what we do separately and for a little while.
Well, if we could finish up, I know you touched on it at the beginning of the interview. You've got this new app coming out. I mean, it sounds very intriguing. I know absolutely nothing of it, so, and I'm sure there's probably some readers that are in the same position. So if you could describe that, and we'll finish up.
Well, first of all, let me just say this. If for someone who really, really wants to get it, what Flux is, and wants to see it and hear it, would be good to go to the Kickstarter campaign that we have. Now, I'm not trying to elicit money from your listeners or readers. I'm just saying that's the place you would go to really get a great understanding of it. It's hard to explain in words, but there's a video, several videos, and so much information about it. If you wanted to do that, you would go to Kickstarter campaign, look up Flux Music That Is Never the Same. It's under the technology division, and then I think you'll have a much better understanding of it. So let me tell you about it anyway, though. First of all, it's a music app. It's all new music for me. I've been recording this music for almost 5 years now. It's hundreds of pieces. They're short pieces. There are songs. Sometimes you will hear the song all the way through, but most of the time you will hear a portion of the song. And what happens is that portion of the song will be playing along, and all of a sudden it will be completely interrupted by something else. We have built in something we call snippets, and snippets are 1 second to 17 seconds long. They can be anything. They can be, you know, a phone ringing. They can be a guitar sound. They can be, you know, an effect or someone laughing, anything that will interrupt what you're listening to and turn into the next thing. So that's the idea behind Flux. It's very fast-paced, because there are hundreds of pieces in it, they never quite realign themselves the same way twice. When you press the play button for Flux, it will play for around a half an hour, and each half an hour will be different than any other time for you or anyone else. It comes with visuals that do the same thing. on your iPhone or your iPad, you can watch visuals that happen with each change of the music. They're never the same with the music either. They're not in sync with it. They're sort of the kind of visuals that morph from one thing to another. There's a favorite button. So you can press, if you hear something you're really liking, you can press the favorite button. It automatically puts it into a playlist, and you can go back and hear that piece anytime you want, just like you would with any kind of CD or download. So it doesn't mean you can only listen to it in this quick, fast-paced, random way. But that's the way it's meant to be listened to. There's also a history that tells you everything that you've been listening to. There's an information button. You press that, and you can see lyrics. You can read backstories about how what caused the song to happen, or recording techniques, or what gear we used. Tons of information in this package. And the last really interesting and different thing about Flux is not only is it never the same twice, but it never is finished. So I can update and change it and add new pictures and new videos and new songs and new pieces of music for as long as I want. So it's my new artistic platform, because what I love about it is because it's not trying to be a song format that's supposed to be on a radio station, it allows me to kind of use anything that I like the sound of. And that's really intrigues me, because for years I would write stuff that I couldn't use on record, because records were, you know, you have to have 12 songs and they have to be this kind of length and so forth. There's kind of a formula for it all, and this breaks free from that. I believe Flux is exactly what the internet needs. I don't mean the internet itself. I mean it's the internet generations,
right,
which is all of us. Because when you think about the internet now, it's kind of changed the way that people process information, whether we realize it or not. We get things in quick, random bursts, lots of information. Things happen quickly. But there's no music that really does that. And I just figured it's time for to have music that kind of does the same sort of ADD, short attention span kind of thing that the internet and television commercials have always done.
Well, no, that's very cool. I mean, it makes complete sense. I mean, it sounds like you can either go long or short or whatever your fancy that particular moment. So it sounds very cool. I'll definitely make sure that I mention the Kickstarter campaign and all that stuff that goes along with it. So
yeah, I'm not, you know, trying to elicit money, although if anyone wants to help out, that's part of it. But I really think that's where you'll get the best explanation of it, and you can actually see it and hear it and see what's going on there. And it's been 5 years in the making. We've had 2 years now. We've worked with an international designing company in Amsterdam who has designed all the software. We have actual control over the randomness, so it's not totally random. We can build in probabilities. So, for example, when I put in a new song, I'll probably raise that probability level. It'll happen randomly, but it'll happen more often than other things. And then after a while, I can lower it back down to be like most of the other things. So in that way, you have some sense of control about it, because I don't want it to be that for a half an hour you just hear all snippets or something. So I want to make sure that every half an hour has a variety of all the different things that are in there.
Wow. Well, very cool. Well, it sounds excellent. Well, thank you very much. I certainly appreciate you taking the time today. I'll make sure I send off a copy of the preview piece when it goes up, and hopefully I'll have a chance to catch you when you play at the Trough. I know you've been there before, so you're familiar with the venue.
I like that venue. It's very nice. We've had great shows there, so come back and say hi.
Oh, that'd be excellent. All right. Well, I appreciate it, and thanks for everything, and good luck on hitting the road tomorrow, you said?
Tomorrow we drive to Charlottesville, Virginia. We play on Wednesday.
All right, excellent. Well, have a wonderful tour and have a safe trip to Buffalo.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Adrian. Bye-bye.
All right, well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Adrian Belew. We'll shift over now to Pat Mastalotto. As I mentioned in the intro, Pat was with Mr. you know, just kind of an interesting band from the 1980s. Richard Page still performing out there with Ringo Starr right now. Pat was part of the reformed King Crimson, which was covering the whole era of Crimson music, and you heard Adrian talk about that in his interview. Pat will talk about, you know, the situation with Adrian not being invited to join this particular lineup of the band. Pat will also talk about, you know, the history of Crimson and the importance of it, and, you know, we'll wind up having a little bit of general chat. Couple spots in this audio that are a little bit broken up just because there was a problem with the connection of the phone on Pat's end. This wasn't originally recorded as an audio interview, so we kind of run into these things every now and then. But it's something I hope that you enjoy. And here we go, Pat Mastalotto.
Hello, good morning.
Yeah, hi, is this Pat?
Yeah, man.
Hey, Pat, Tom Jennings from the Rochester, New York area.
The Gazette, right, Tom?
Niagara Gazette, yes, very good.
Okay.
Great, great to chat with you. Probably only be about 15 minutes, if that's cool. And
yeah.
If you don't mind, I guess I'll start with probably the question you get asked more than anything at this stage of your career. I mean, the new...
What's for dinner?
Second to What's for Dinner. You know, King Crimson, three drummers, kind of a new thing and whatnot. And I guess I wonder when sort of the seeds for this this triple drummer attack started, and, you know, if Robert approached you first or when it all kind of came together, and you being sort of the centerpiece of the drum trio. I mean, what were your initial thoughts? And then a couple of years into it now, what are you thinking of how it's working for you?
Well, first off, I'm not the centerpiece. I'm maybe the oldest piece currently, but I'm not the centerpiece. Let's see. When did Robert get this virus, this nasty bug that made him think like this? He called in 2013. And you know Robert had retired, or maybe you don't know this, Robert had retired a few years before that. So I was very surprised. He called in 2013 and said he wanted to put Crimson back together again. And told me there on the phone that he envisioned a seven-piece Crimson with three drummers. And I was a little surprised, but I immediately said yes. Finished talking, and then I realized I never asked him who the other musicians were.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, so you say you were a little surprised. I mean, did you assume at that point maybe like Adrian Blue was going to be involved? I know I've interviewed Adrian, and he was kind of a little bit taken by the
right,
fact that
right.
he wasn't involved.
Yeah, I'm sorry you're going to have to chop up or paraphrase this interview. I've never talked in a straight conscious here. What surprised me was that I thought Robert was completely retired and finished. So I didn't think there would be another Crimson. So when he called, I didn't think he would be asking about participating in the band again. I just thought he was calling for some other reason. So that was why I was surprised. Yeah, I was kind of shocked when he said Adrian would not be part of it. But, I mean, he mentioned it right then on the phone. And... I don't know if we want to get into all that.
No, I mean, there's really no need. I mean, I think in many ways, even from talking to Adrian, it seems like Adrian never really wanted to combine sort of the full history of the band. That I don't know that Adrian, even when he originally started playing with the group, wanted it to be King Crimson. I think he wanted it to be another name. So it would make sense if Robert was sort of going to reconcile all of the eras of King Crimson, that it may not make sense to have Adrian. I mean, is that a proper assessment?
Yeah, man. I mean, you can kind of hone this down, but as you know, with Crimson, we never really did the catalog of material from earlier Crimsons, or maybe you don't know that.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm very, very well aware of that.
Yeah, so... As you're sort of alluding to, Adrian was probably never going to be happy singing those flowery lyrics, you know, the hippie stuff from the 60s and you know, so it was great that Robert, it's a beautiful thing about Robert that he lets the band start fresh every time. So when they started in the 80s, it gave Adrian and the guys a clean slate to invent basically a new band, a new style of music. What's different about this, and I didn't understand it when Robert first called, was that we were going to do so much of the older material. And I don't know if you noticed, he called the earlier tours the Elements Tour. And he sort of, by bringing back Mel Collins, I guess he sort of picked elements of different incarnations of Crimson, you know, kind of threw those in the blender to whip them up and give us something new. So I was sad because Adrian's a good buddy, but I can see once the band got going why it wouldn't have really worked like this with Adrian, because there's no front man in the band in this King Crimson. Robert's got the drums down front, and he's we don't talk through the entire show. There's no a typical relationship of the front man speaking to the audience. We don't have that. We don't do that. And I just feel like that would have probably been really awkward for Adrian to be bouncy, happy Adrian.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, he's doing great stuff. And as I said, I know I talked to him right after he found out. I think he was a little bit burnt. But then this last time I talked to him was maybe 3 or 4 months ago. He's like, no, I totally get it. I get it. And I'm glad for them, and he's doing some amazing stuff, as I'm sure you know, with the whole Flux
and all that great. Stuff. He's really lucky that that movie came in right at that time, which I'm sure helped pick up his spirits, the Disney movie, which he got an Academy Award for. I mean, he's just a super talent. And, you know, Tony and I will play with Adrian again, I guess it's the beginning of August. We're going to do there's some gigs up in East Coast.
Well, good. Yeah, and you know, I'm glad you brought up Tony Levin, because I didn't want to go too far away from that. I mean, this is a show that's coming to the Rochester area, and Tony's kind of a beloved legend out here. You know, the whole Levin Gad thing that went around for a long time.
You know what, buddy? He's a beloved guy all over the world. I mean, however you just said it there, the beloved legendary Tony of Rochester, it's the same place when you go to Italy or South America or Japan, you know.
Well, he attended the Eastman School in Rochester, so that's kind of the local connection. Tony and and I think Steve Gadd were around that same time, and I want to say, I'm not sure Jerry Marotta, if he falls in that. I know Tony's played with him as well, but Tony's it's got to be pretty cool. I mean, you do a lot of work with him, even outside of the Crimson thing. It's just got to be amazing to watch the innovations that a guy like Tony brings to his instrument.
Yeah. And I think Chuck Mangione was another guy right at Rochester around the time. I hear a lot of stories, and I played in Rochester several times with Tony, and there's other characters, I don't know, some of his old buddies from school, Steve, and I can't remember the other guys' names, but we see them every time we get up there. I'm drawing a blank. I wish I could think of their names. And I mean, when you're talking about Tony and his creativity, as you probably know, he writes poetries and poetry photography, and he's just so super active. We just rehearsed with Crimson in England last month, and Tony, are you familiar with what he calls funk fingers?
Yeah, it's the long, they look like giant long fingernails that he taps on the bass with. Is that those?
Yeah, the Freddy Krueger thing.
Yes.
So yeah. he had done this with Peter Gabriel, I think, on the song Big Time. Jerry Marotta had played with the drumstick striking the string while Tony fretted it, and then when they went to tour with Gabriel, they devised this way that he cut down some drumsticks and kind of velcros them onto his fingers. Well, when we just rehearsed this last month, he spent almost every day trying to reconfigure these funk fingers. He was putting socks on the end of them, or little booties, or a little tin foil, or you know, to take advantage of the rehearsal time to try all these different sonic options with his funk fingers.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, it's just amazing. I don't want to stray too far from King Crimson. I mean, a band that just has such an incredible history, and I'm sure it's not lost on you that it's weird that you kind of went back and sort of started, Robert at least started embracing that early Crimson era material, and then we lose Greg Lake and John Wetton in very short order. I mean, is it something that kind of kicked around at all in the back of your mind to think, man, you know, these guys are gone, but, you know, thankfully we're in a position to kind of carry on their legacy?
Well, it's just sad, and I didn't know either of them very well at all, but, you know, they touched me musically and a lot of other people, and to play their material on stage, it's really profound. It's really strong material, and, you know, it's a sad, I don't know how to put it. It's a sad time for people of our generation. We're going to be losing, you know, I mean, there's just too many people going to, that's the end of the road, you know? So, to lose Bowie and Prince and Wetton and Greg Lake, and it's just, it just is what it is.
Yeah, I guess it's a function. I mean, I guess on more of a positive spin, it's really great to think of the fact that Robert's not retired, because, you know, it's one thing to lose a musician who's not necessarily active. You know, I mean, granted, you know, we all loved Bowie and everything, but he hadn't really been super active for a lot of years because of his health issues and whatnot. But, man, a guy like Robert, he's one of those people you only, I mean, if you get to see him once in your lifetime, it's you're in the presence of just incredible greatness. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I'm touched by his music, you know, as a teenager, and like a lot of people, a lot. But my wife, I remarried in the last 10 years now, and she did not grow up with Crimson, so she had never listened to the music or the band until coming to their show in 2008. She saw those shows, and she had an interesting observation to me. She said, she's like, get it now, he's an emotional manipulator. I mean, so many people get hung up on technology of what Robert's playing, but that part that makes your skin crawl, where you where I get goosebumps anyway, you know, that's not by a flurry of fast notes. It's by somehow he's tapped into the right notes, the right frequencies and harmonies. They, for me at least, you know, they get a strong reaction. It's
yeah, no doubt.
I can't control it, man, you know. Yeah. Sit on stage sometimes and I swell up and cry, you know.
Wow.
And that's the power. That's the power of music, you know. I mean, I'm sure that's everybody in the world gets touched point like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I remember I know Carlos Santana wrote a book recently about, you know, how certain guitarists have that tone that's so instantly recognizable. And, of course, Carlos falls in that category, and Robert especially. It's not the equipment. It's not the technique per se. It's that something that's almost an invisible force that belongs to that human being that no tribute band or anyone else can recreate.
You're there, man. You're gonna write a better story if you don't even use anything I say. You get it.
You've given me some great stuff. We're coming up on 15 minutes, so I you know, throw a couple of sort of fanboy stuff at you. I'm a huge Kim Mitchell fan as well. I believe, if I remember correctly, you worked with Kim. Just another amazing guitarist, probably one of the more underrated guys in the universe, but. What was that experience like? And I mean, you still stay in contact with Kim at all?
No. And like many sessions I've done, I don't always meet the artist, and I never met Kim.
Wow.
I knew him as, what was his name up there before he had a side name?
Max Webster.
Max. So I think I'd seen him as Max Webster ages and ages ago. But it just came to me. I was in Los Angeles, and it was a session. The producer was Paul DeVillier, who had also co-produced and worked with Mr. Band and other things that I'd done. And he had some few tracks, so I just did a little drumming on a few songs. And I never actually met Kim.
Oh, that's so crazy.
Well, I have to invite him to the gig. We've got some gigs in Canada. I'll try and see if I can track him down and invite him.
Yeah, you should. He's a great guy. Just an amazing musician. And you were with Mr. As well. I've seen Richard on the Ringo tour. I don't know if you've had a chance to see him. Still sounds great. And, you know, I think that Mr. material holds up very well over time. I mean, it's still stuff when you hear it on the radio. It just kind of makes you smile.
I that's all I could ever hope for. You know, really, honestly, as a musician, what you just said there, you hear it on the radio and it makes you smile. Dude, that's it. That's what, that's better than the paycheck, you know?
Yeah.
The money's gone. When you spend the money, it'll be gone. But the smiles, the memories, that's the shit we hang on to.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've got plenty of memories to make on this upcoming tour. I am just beside myself. I'm going to have the opportunity to see this lineup. I've been a follower of all the different incarnations of Crimson, and to kind of see it all come together is super exciting for me.
Yeah, the band is really good. We have a huge repertoire of material, so there's no telling what we'll play each night because we have so much stuff we can't play it all in one show. And the band gets along really well right now, so the energy in the band is really good, and I'm excited to get to share that with people.
Awesome. Yeah, my youngest is a drummer, and I'm sure it's going to be one of those experiences for him.
How old is he?
He's 23.
Three?
Yeah.
Well, he's a grown-up.
He's a grown-up. I'm 50, so I've got, I said, I kind of grew up in the right era for Crimson. Crimson was a little bit before my time, but that first album was, I grew up listening to a lot of Yes, King Crimson. I'm a huge Todd Rundgren fan, Peter Gabriel.
Me too.
You know, so, yeah.
I'm a superhero growing up. In fact, I don't buy CDs very often, but I just bought The White Knight. It's a new Todd Rundgren.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you, if you get a chance to see the tour, I've seen it twice already, and I've seen Todd 141 times, and this tour
is... You've seen Todd that many times?
Yeah. I've been going to see him since I was, like, 14, so I'm a huge fan, but the new tour is like, he's kind of like you guys, you know, like Fripp. He doesn't just sit back on his heels and play the hits in casinos. I mean, he always puts something together that really is innovative and blows your mind. And there's always a few people that are like, eh, you know, I wish it was the 1972 Todd, but man, it's cool to hear him still doing some great stuff.
Yeah, I totally love him. He's one of my most influential artists growing up, you know, the Beatles and Crimson, but Todd was right there. I used to wear the Todd is God t-shirt, you know, made one myself to wear to the shows when I go see him. So
yeah, great stuff. That Kevin Elman, I mean, he was a heck of a drummer. Neil Peart of Rush cited him as an influence, so he's
throwing himself. I never knew that. I was lucky. I saw the original Utopia, so I got to see Kevin. That was in 1974 at the Santa Monica Civic when I first moved to LA, and the original lineup with the Freak Parade, you know, the three keyboard version of the band, and then saw many times that with the four piece version of Utopia.
Yeah. Well, it's weird if you listen to Kevin Elman's drumming, you can hear where Neil would have picked up some of the stylings of Kevin. Like, it's not one of those things that you would notice unless somebody said it, but it's if you go back and listen to some of that stuff, it's like, oh yeah, no, I totally get where he's coming from, and I wouldn't have expected that out of Rush. But you know, instead, I mean, you never know where your influencers are going to come from.
I was always curious if he was related to Yvonne Elliman, the singer girl. Remember her?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm actually connected with him on LinkedIn. I could even throw something out, and maybe find out. But
I always wonder if they were husband, wife, brother, sister.
Yeah. Well, he dropped out of the music industry for years. He was a financial consultant. So he just went a whole different direction.
Well, let him know, dude, that he was a huge influence on me too. You know, really only the one big record that I know of, Bookier record, and some of the individual songs on different Todd records he played on.
Yeah,
he plays on several things on Todd. I believe they're really good. I think he plays on King Kong Reggae and some of those tracks.
Yeah, watch a big monkey do the King Kong Reggae. Yeah, great stuff.
All right, well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Pat. It was a lot of fun talking to him, as you can tell, very easygoing guy. Loves his music, loves his King Crimson. And this week's episode, I have to say a special thanks out to John Pojeda, who is known in our Todd Rundgren circles as Fotod, because he's a fronts a Todd Rundgren tribute band that we all love and enjoy. And John had posted something with his kid dancing to an Adrian Belew song, and that sort of made me think, well, geez, I should probably dig this interview up. It's a good one. Also want to thank my brother-in-law, Jack, if he's made it to this point of the podcast, and any of you that have made it to the end of the podcast. It can be a bit of a solitary effort. This turns into somewhat of a vanity project after a while. My earning statements for plays last month said I earned 15 cents, so I'm not going to be getting rich anytime soon. But if you want to donate to the podcast, support it, you certainly can do that. Someday I'll set up a link for that. But in the meantime, we thank you again for joining me, and I will see you at my next concert. At least I hope so.